our good friend and host here at the Nefesh B'Nefesh headquarters in Jerusalem, is, of course, Rabbi Yehoshua Fass, who is the co-founder of Nefesh B'Nefesh. A pleasure to welcome you back to JM in the AM.
Pleasure to be here. Pleasure to host you.
It was just Memorial Day weekend, so I bring you greetings from the land of the free, Palestine, and the land and the home of the brave demonstrators who are ready. The brave demonstrators who are ready to overtake college campuses in the United States. So those are the two new additions to that well-known slogan. It's not home of the free anymore. It's home of the free Palestine, because that seems to be the trend in the United States. And then, of course, the bravery goes to those who are willing to put on masks and speak up on behalf of those who they feel are either underprivileged or victims of genocide. What a way to start this conversation.
I was just about to say that.
On a Tuesday afternoon for us here in Jerusalem. And by the way, and people know, obviously, that you have some type of relationship with the people at El Al. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but this has been the reaction. I came here, landed yesterday, was curious if the airport was empty, and the area where I'm normally picked up by my nephew was empty by coincidence, or it was just one of those mornings. Sometimes you have that. It was one of those mornings where you could fly through the airport and you could go and benachas get into your cab without 1,000 cars trying to get through and chase you out of there. And I've done my research, and sure enough, based on what the hotel people tell me and based on what the cab drivers are telling me, there's nobody here. So, of course, you know me. I'm trying to convince people to get trips to Israel on the calendar. And what's the reaction? Way too expensive a ticket. Now, I know that that's the case, and I have to assume that there's a reason for that, that the tickets are so much more than they were in the recent past, go back to a year ago. I don't know if there's anything we could do about it. I would love, you know, I'd love to do Rabbi Fass.
What?
And you're always great for a creative idea. I would love to do this. This was done back in the early 1990s. I'd love to take $500,000 if I had it. I don't even know if that's the price. I mean, I'm not going to put you on the spot to ask the price. I'd like to have $500,000, charter a plane, get people to reserve at $500 a seat. 500 is a reasonable, you know.
We priced it out already.
You priced that plane? Just for visiting, for tourism?
Oh, no. We'll talk about that another time.
No, but I'm talking about the tourism piece.
Tourism piece, yes. Tourism piece, you can create your own charters.
But it's expensive.
It's very expensive.
And if you want to have an impact, you got to do 10
100%.
Of them. Right.
And fix the price for people so that they can attend. Yeah.
500, open it up for registration. I'm sure there are plenty of hotels in Jerusalem that would take people at $50 a night.
100%.
100%. Not even a question about that. And, you know, and some of these people that are being supported by some of the great causes in Jerusalem and in Tzfat and areas that are Tel Aviv and areas that are known for, you know, a reliance on tourism, maybe they would have a little bit of a respite. But anyway.
No, it's tough times. It's you feel it. You feel it, especially these weeks. It
right.
seemed like several weeks ago there was really, you saw the movement, you felt the crowds coming and visiting. But it's been quiet.
Well, I would argue that October, November, and December were more active than now.
Oh, 1,000%.
And that could be because of solidarity trips and the immediate reaction that people had. And people had reservations already and they were like, you know, I'm going because I'm not going to cancel and things like that. But now it's very different. And look, the fear is, and we don't have to go into detail, I think anyone who watches the news knows this, the fear is that in the next few months, summer months, which usually do have a lot of activity from outside of Israel, not just America, from outside of Israel in general, could be very difficult. And I know tourism is not the most important topic when it comes to the next few months, but I try to think what we can do. And that's one of the main things we could do.
Now, in conversations with colleagues, they're lamenting that the summer programs are being hurt and hit.
Yeah, boy.
Dramatically.
Some of them really dramatically, yeah. All right, so that's my research so far this trip. I guess if people wanted an update, because, you know, people always say, as is the tradition in Jewish history, someone goes to Israel, everybody asks, so what's doing? What's going on there? So that's my first reaction.
Okay.
Nobody's coming, and I know that the prices are sky high, but there's nothing we can do about it at the moment. And I'm sure, again, I'm not putting you on the spot, but I'd have to imagine knowing you've done what you can to advocate for a little bit more sensitivity in this area, that people, you know, in positions of power at the airlines understand that with a little bit of an adjustment, they could be making a big difference. That's all.
Correct.
There you go.
We're not going to add to this. We're not going to add to this conversation.
I'm trying to think how to get more out of you.
No, you're not going to get.
By the way, Rabbi Fass has announced, to his credit,
what?
That he'll be at the parade, which has a new name, by the way. I think it's called Israel on 5th. It's a brand new name.
Why? Why do they change the name?
Not sure. And it's funny because the social media stuff is all still Celebrate Israel. But
is that to throw off the protesters?
It could be. I have my theories. Sometimes people think change is good for the sake of change. So that could be. But anyway, I think people already have discovered one way or another that we will not be on the parade, meaning we, the Nachum Segal Network, won't be on the parade route the way we traditionally are. Hopefully we'll be at the parade in some capacity. I do want everyone to understand, and I think it's a fair warning, that the security at this Sunday's parade is going to be like something you've never seen before. People should know that. Again, we're encouraging people to come and be spectators, but they should at least be aware of that in advance.
And I think people are expecting that.
I guess, right.
They would have to expect that.
Right. So I started with the Free Palestine and College Campus things. I need your reaction because you
Why?
Asked I need your you asked me about this, and I told you what it's like to be in the United States and watch all this go on. I have to assume that from a larger vantage point and being thousands of miles away, it's got to look more absurd than it does to us being there. It has to, when you see college campuses being overrun and administrations essentially caving in.
I don't think absurd is the word. I think it's quite frightening.
Yeah.
It's frightening. It's frightening to see the level of allowance of this happening, the support that a lot of the student bodies are receiving, the capitulation of certain college and university administration to these protests. And what's quite frightening is how fast that climate has changed. Or maybe it's always been under the surface, but how fast it's been allowed. Yeah. And without any repercussions whatsoever.
And I have to remind people, you founded this organization at a time when there was conflict, let's call it that, intifada, right? Conflict in the Middle East. You and I, because of you, experienced certain, you know, wartime dramatic aliyah, right? And but why do you think now, if there's been over the last 20, 25 years, so many periods of time where the enemy could have been represented in these types of demonstrations and protests, not just in the United States, but around the world. And I know sometimes it does happen, obviously, in other places. Why do you think now this has been, you know, this take it to the streets, yell genocide, free Palestine, a movement that's attracting so many? In 2014, that's not what was happening. Israel was at war with Gaza then.
I'm 6,000 miles away most of my life. I think it's a confluence of a lot of factors. And I think we've talked about this off the air a lot. I think a lot of factors have brought us to this point. Extreme liberal approach to many things in life that has elevated the underdog or the perceived underdog as being the one that's virtuous.
We're on the wrong team.
Yeah. And the fact that new seems to be better, or an enlightened perspective is considered, you know, righteous, and it's a valueless approach.
Are there members of the Israeli media who would fit in that category? We haven't gotten to that point.
I'm not going to comment.
But are there people like that?
No. I think not to that extent.
Right.
We're always a few years behind. The question is whether or not it's inevitable, or the people will see this and change course so that it doesn't get to that inevitable end. A lot has happened over the last few years,
right?
Politically, geographically, demographically, that has created a perfect storm for this outburst or for this revolt.
What do you answer people? And you might have this actually this coming weekend because you're going to be parade, obviously. You're going to be spending some time in the United States. What do you answer people when they ask if Israel's winning this war?
I asked this to someone high up in the army, someone with a ranking IDF member, and I asked him a similar question, and very sobering response. And he said, we lost a war on October 7th. We lost a war. And now it's a recalibration.
To not lose the next one.
And to correcting a wrong and to regird ourselves to recalibrate that compass of what our might is and what our strength is. And I don't think we can look at it as you know, black or white, are we winning the war or not? There's so many different variables here and so many different objectives of the war. We have so many families who are mourning, so many families who are taking care of their injured relatives on a scale that we can't imagine. Families of hostages and our soldiers who are fighting to eradicate a real evil with a capital E, an evil that we haven't seen for 80 years. And it's hard. Erev Yom HaTzma'ut, I usually go with my kids. We go to Har Herzl, usually, just to give a sense of loss and sacrifice. And I've been to so many funerals with my kids over the last 7-8 months. It's been very, very hard to stand next to a child, one of your children or multiple children. Sometimes we've went to 3-4 of my kids with me. And it's, you see it, they're internalizing it. Their whole perspective of life and Israel and the world. And it's sad. It's almost that sparkle. Not that it's dimmed. And it's hard to see that. So I didn't want to go back to Har Herzl, and especially the government and the public was asking that thus let Har Herzl be reserved for families of soldiers. So we went to Kikar Chatufim, and we spent a few hours in Tel Aviv, just talking to families and feeling the intense pain. And we gained a whole different emotional depth to what we're going through, leading into Yom HaTzmaut and trying to jostle or juggle those two different emotions of the beauty of this gift, the magic and the majesty of the gift of the State of Israel, and the intense pain and sacrifice and confusion and concern that we're all experiencing at the same time. You want to soar, but you're very much tethered and anchored to a very, very heavy weight. And I think we're all feeling that. We're all feeling that life is propelling you to move on, but it's an impossibility to move on. And you're finding yourself being pulled emotionally, focus-wise, constantly throughout the day.
So everything you just described could, and this is no secret, anybody who follows the news from Israel knows this, could get even worse. I know that's the right word, but can escalate because of the potential of what might happen up north.
Well, potential of what's happening up north and potential of continued fighting in Rafiah. Just this morning, a few of our staff received another tzav to go back into Miluim.
How long from now?
Some of them.
Immediate?
Immediate. A few days from now. Immediate. 2 weeks. So that itself, it's very real. We all feel it. It's not just our kids who are being drafted, our colleagues, our friends, our coworkers. It's constant. We're in a state of war. And that dominates everything. And it's very hard, quite honestly. We started this conversation, I don't not forget about the campus, we started just this recent conversation of just getting on a plane and going to the parade. That itself is just fraught with so many different conflicting emotions. Getting on a plane.
How many times did you think about Nefesh B'Nefesh not participating this year?
It didn't cross my mind.
You were in.
We were in from, I think it's important that we're there. I think it's important that people that we celebrate or march,
because there is a movement that it's not the year for a parade.
But. If there was a parade, let's put it that way.
Then you're
I'm also conflicted with whether or not a parade should happen or not. But if there's a demonstration of solidarity, let's take away the word celebration. If there is an experience of solidarity, if there's an event of solidarity of diaspora to Israel, then we should be there. Especially being that bridge and that household name and brand, we should be there. But it's conflicting. It's conflicting for me. It's hard for me to get on a plane and to leave. It's hard to march. And quite honestly, I'm not fearful, but I'm just...
curious.
No.
I
think that's the right... I'm not trying to find the right word. I'm reluctant. And I'm apprehensive to what we're going to experience on Sunday.
Yeah, I get that. Rabbi Fass is with us. All right, so the question that people are wondering about, although I think most people who ask it know the answer already, and that is the movement permanently of Jews from North America to the State of Israel. In fact, you've added other countries and initiatives, which we spoke about on the air. It's not a secret. We've spoken about it on the air. I mean, you had a very successful journey to Paris, thank God.
It was remarkable.
Which was something you never stopped telling me about. It was just great.
Remarkable.
And
can't
now
stop talking about it.
There's a rumor in this building about a South American initiative.
We're going to Argentina.
You know, it's a long trip, right?
It is ridiculously long.
I mean, and you do New York, which is long, and this is even longer.
Motec, it's 2 days of traveling to get... We have an event on Sunday.
Oh,
it's
God.
July 7th. The event's July 7th, I think so, in Argentina, on San Buenos Aires. And I have to leave on Wednesday.
To be there before Shabbos.
To get there before Shabbos. You have to stop. It's like 20 hours of flights with a 5-6 hour layover. It's a lot of traveling. You're coming? You're coming to do MedEx in Argentina?
Just this discussion about the 20 hours will keep
And it's also winter there. So
you have to bring your winter coat.
Bring winter coat.
That's funny. You have to like prepare for two different types of climate.
Completely.
Yeah. So, is this the same thing? Same medical type thing as Paris or?
It's going to be a little less because we're piggybacking on a Jewish agency, Aliyah Fair. Because the community's smaller, we're not going to have 500 physicians right. that we had in France, but we're taking a side of the an ongoing Aliyah
Fair. But you might have 200.
Sure. Well, we'll see. It's the first time that I'm there, it's the first time that we're exposing individuals to this concept, to this project, and looking very much forward to seeing the response.
I was contacted by physicians. This is interesting. I was contacted by physicians who were asked to come to Israel on October 7th, October 10th. You know, you got the idea.
Sure.
You dealt with plenty of them. And they have not been asked back. And they were somewhat, you know, curious as to why they can't go volunteer their services again. And you're signaling to me as if the entire movement's over. That's not true?
Most of the project's closed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have enough.
Because they conjectured that the type of medical needs today, as compared to the immediate aftermath of the start of the war, is simply different. And the emergency medicine in certain areas that were such big requirements early on.
Oh, 100%.
Right, it's just very different now.
I've been saying, not morbidly, but I've been able to track the war by the Ministry of Health's request for me to find them physicians.
Right.
From the first few weeks of forensic pathologists to thoracic surgeons to just watching the wave of needs that this country needed.
And when you say the program's closed, that means...
Not closed. It's just the demand is different and dwindled.
But that would mean that there's sufficient personnel right now.
It means that...
Or close to sufficient personnel.
For whatever Israel deems as being sufficient for their requirements, they are meeting.
Sounds like you would not have closed the program.
I'm just saying. I have to be very careful with...
You could say that again. Okay, so now let's talk about North American Aliyah.
Yes.
Because I would guess it's the same answer you've been giving us since 2001. It's basically the same answer. Times of trouble where everyone suspects is going to be a lessening of Aliyah has simply demonstrated a love for Israel and an anxiousness of North American Jewry to get there as soon as possible.
Thank you, Josh Fass.
Right, that's it. That's the bottom line.
We are seeing...
So your staff's been busy.
It's been very busy. The only comparable year was when we recalibrated post-COVID. So we are at touching 100% increase of interest. It's just unfathomable. To say that we have 500 documents coming in a day that we have to sort through for people's Aliyah files is not an exaggeration. It's across the gamut, across the age demographic, where they're coming from. The question is when and how will be translated into real numbers.
Right.
And we have a lot of people who are finishing the process and saying, I'm not booking a flight yet because I'm waiting to see what's happening with the war. I'm waiting to see if another front's going to open. And our response is, that makes sense. It's logical. I understand when you're having young kids and you have to start school and you want to plan, it makes sense to keep to it. There's some who like, it doesn't make a difference. My heart, not only with Mizrach, but my legs are with, I'm going to move. But others who are cautious and there's nothing, I have no justification or hatzdakah to be able to respond to that statement. So it'll be very interesting to see which group of people continue, which will put it on ice, when will that be thawed, and when will people actualize that interest. But the interest is there. The pool is there. It could be a remarkable beginning of a wave. And to see if once you hit that dam a little bit and there's a crack and all of a sudden you see this spike, does that spike continue? I was hoping that spike would continue post-COVID. That recalibration or that massive pause that people had during that year and a half of evaluating their own trajectory, their own connection to community, their own ability to work remotely.
Their inability to get to Israel.
Exactly. That was so jarring and became such a game changer for people. So we saw that huge spike that we never saw in North American Aliyah history since 48. And then it petered out. Then it became back to what it was as a high number, but not it was at that spike. And now we're seeing the potential for that spike again. The question is whether or not it'll actualize. And the second question, whether or not it'll be sustained. And it'll be interesting to see.
And back in 01 and in 14, no one said to you, we'll wait to see what happens with the Intifada. We'll wait to see what happens with the war. Because essentially, once their Aliyah process was near its end,
they went through.
Those things had ended, and then they kept
Correct.
So that's a big difference between now and back then. And and this is the highest new application, I'm assuming, right? Brand new applications.
Oh, yeah.
It's by far the highest. Not just documents. It's
No.
People who have started a process that they hopefully will complete, but one that has generated a tremendous amount of enthusiasm to get to Israel as soon as possible. I'm with Rabbi Yehoshua Fass, co-founder of Nefesh B'Nefesh, and you can start your own journey into the world of moving to Israel by going to nbn.org.il or by calling 866-4-ALIYAH. You have a large number of group flights going this summer. That number is going to be around
13,
which is a lot for a season, right?
Oh, it's a lot.
That's never been matched before.
No, we usually have that one charter flight and a couple of smaller groups. Now we're this summer, because of a whole many different variables and factors, we're splitting into 13 major group flights that will have staff on it and processing and a celebratory welcome. And this way, instead of focusing on 280 Olim and giving them the full attention, we're going to spread our love to around 2,000, 2,500 people over the summer.
And those will all be from the New York area?
Yeah.
Right. Is there a group flight that goes from places like Toronto, Miami, Boston, anything else?
We used to, but we'll see the availability.
That's happened in the past. It's not a strange thing.
No, we had one from California.
You had a group flight from L.A.?
Yeah, we had from years ago.
Direct from L.A.? Interesting.
A group that joined, I'm not sure if it went directly or went to but New York, but there was definitely a group that was coalesced together and went from Florida. I have to look through the Nefesh.
The Adels of history.
The archives.
The last couple of times we were here, because of your initiative, we were able to focus on the unique program of getting parents to reunite with their lone soldiers. It's hard for me to believe that you were able to pull this off, frankly, but you did pull it off. I don't know if that's still continuing. I don't know what the situation is, if there's still Is there an Operation Hug that's still going on? Or
we closed it a month ago. We bought 1,200 parents.
North America?
No.
Oh, no, anywhere. It could be anywhere, right?
It was actually from 30 countries. Right. Majority was from America, but we had people fly in from around the world. And it was logistically, it was a Herculean feat. And the reunions were just remarkable.
1,200 in the same week?
No, 1,200 since we started Operation Hug.
Ah, got it.
I don't think there were 1,200 seats in it.
So the 30 countries, you're talking about the entire operation.
Yeah, the entire operation. Countries. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pretty cool.
A costly logistic. Never thank again, greatest appreciation to both the JNF and the FIDF for making that happen. I think it was remarkable to see three institutions just focus, forget about their own turfdom, just focus on what was necessary. And it was really a beautiful act of synergy and solidarity just on an institutional level, which besides making 1,200 soldiers and their parents have that union, I think the union of the institutional level was equally embracing and beautiful.
Interesting. So for those who think that there isn't common ground among Jewish institutions, that's really heartwarming.
I take really great pride in that union and that act of just putting egos aside and focusing on the needs of our clientele and our colleagues and our neighbors and our soldiers.
What else can we do for our soldiers? And I'm not saying that you need to implement more initiatives. I'm just wondering, there are a lot of good causes. There are a lot of good initiatives. There are some fun ones, as we know, that people like supporting, you know, that help bring some great spirit to the soldiers. If someone were to ask you, what can we do? We're thousands of miles away. We really want to help out the soldiers in Israel. What would you say to them?
Pray. Pray. They have what they need. Just need your tefillot.
They have what they need.
Yeah. They need your tefillot. Every morning you should wake up, take a name, daven for them. Pray for them before you go to bed at night. Think of them. They're thinking of you. They're thinking of the Jewish people. They're putting their lives on hold.
And on the line.
Their wives and kids are, if they're married and the kids are worried sick, daven, pray for them as well to give them the strength. That's what we need.
And the first month or two of the war, we made a point about what these families are going through. People have forgotten that. I mean, I'm glad you bring it up again because this way we get to remind people. But the families that are left behind are just going through.
And it's thousands, the entire country feels it.
Right. It's the same as it was in October, November, folks. It's the same thing. And we have to remember that.
The elasticity or the resilience of our emotions are just remarkable that we can, there becomes a new normal almost. It's the same, but we become normalized to things.
Yeah.
And we have to remind ourselves of the acuteness of the pain and the acuteness of our sacrifice and the acuteness of what's happening. I'm very moved by those who put, you know, on the masking tape the day of how many days our hostages have been in captive. It makes it very real and very now and very acute. Or wearing the yellow ribbon for us hostages to remind us. Or every morning saying a tefillah for our chayalim, or making sure that we say Tehillim and Psalms during our prayers. It just reminds us that the new normal is still the acute situation that we were experiencing a few months ago. And it's hard. And I feel you're tethered by that emotion. You also want to move forward. You have a summer to plan of new Zionists coming into this country. I'm servicing new immigrants that just came, at the same time focusing on the lone soldiers. It's bizarre. It's a bizarre, weird experience of being pulled in so many different dimensions and so many different emotions. We just had a day, I was telling you offline, 2 weeks ago, when it was, and the Army asked us to do a mini Yom Sidurim, a day of of helping, easing the bureaucracy.
Logistical
bureaucratic easing for lone soldiers from around the world. So we had 3,500 lone soldiers from 60 countries that were constantly in touch with and responsible, were mandated by the IDF to be responsible for these lone soldiers. There are many beautiful initiatives around the world for lone soldiers, but we're the only mandated contractor, you know, with us and the FIDF to take care of lone soldiers. And we did a day of just something small, but just a gesture to the lone soldiers of converting their driver's license and giving them driver's tests. And we did it with Ministry of Transportation. We did it a couple of weeks ago. We had 940 lone soldiers bussed from around the country to the point that people mid-battle, the Army took them out. It was quite ridiculous. Like in the morning, all of a sudden we had a couple of hundred soldiers coming in, and it was just people who haven't seen each other, some fighting up north, some fighting down, some stationed at this outpost, some in the middle of training or superior training, and just having them see each other and connecting and just breathing and exhaling for a second. That itself was so beautiful to see. And then all of a sudden, a bus from Rafiah comes, from Rafah comes. Oh. Soldiers, literally from the heart of battle, coming in, changing their licenses, taking. And I'm telling you that we had, I think, 40 plus driver testers who came with their cars and they were testing people, and they volunteered their time. And I'm telling you, they were so easy on these soldiers.
Like, that's the secret. Go to the front.
I'm telling you, I said to my staff, I said, note to self, get off the road for the next 3 weeks. But it was just incredible. And just to see the diversity and just the young soldiers and the somberness of it as well. You're so happy that you have this happy moment or this oasis of sorts of sanity, of normalcy that you're giving these lone soldiers. And then you're hit that the kid that you spoke with 3 days later was killed.
Where was he from?
From Argentina, Elon Cohen. And when I'm in Argentina, I'm going to visit the family. I have a video of us interviewing him at that day. So I went to the Shiva. I said to the father, I have a video of your son, who's Aziz. What a yummy kid. I said, he's talking about just his army service and that day itself. And smiling, so happy, so beautiful. I said, I have the video. I'll show it to you after Shiva. I'm coming to Argentina. I'll come to your house. I'll show you the video.
On a lighter note, your advice to the DMV is if you could drive a tank, you should be able to.
That was my joke, and I said it on to a television reporter. I thought I was off. I thought I wasn't live. They're like, why is this significant? I said, well, if we can drive a tank, you can drive a stupid car. So give him the stupid license. Protecting our country. So let the kid drive to the Makolet.
Two other things. I know you have to run, so two quick things. Number one, I don't want to put words in your mouth, and you may say to me, Nahum, this is not appropriate to bring up with me, but I don't know. I'll take a shot. You'd like to see. You have roots in the United States.
Yes.
You'd like to see. People think twice when they arrange public events during this period of time. You're not saying not to have public events. You're saying go ahead with what you want to do, but try to keep in mind in the process that there's a war going on and a lot of brothers and sisters are in a really serious situations. Would that be fair?
1,000%.
Okay. So that's how we'll put it.
I think we constantly, I mean, again, this is the struggle. Life needs to go on. But we also are anchored to a reality, and a very painful reality, and an intense reality that has life and death repercussions every single day and every single morning. At 6:30 a.m., we see those repercussions when there's an announcement. Don't be tone deaf. And just, there could be nuances that just make it resonate to what's happening.
And it's interesting because I think that more often than not, people do try to.
No, 100%. But time will, those nuances and those sensitivities
will disappear
over time, because that's what time does, for good and for bad, mostly for good, allows us to be resilient and to move forward. But I think we need to be sensitive. That's all I'm saying.
And finally,
yes,
if you are going to be spending Shabbat in the New York, New Jersey area, mm-hmm. there are going to be so many people who are going to be feeling so guilty when they see you.
When I go to New Jersey, I'm the loneliest person. We've talked about this in the past. People are so scared to walk over to me. Their hellos are like 10 seconds. Hello, how you doing? And they walk away. Anyone who spends more than 15 seconds talking to me, God forbid, all of a sudden they'll start bidding for their house. And thinking that they're selling their practice.
You remind me of the old joke, you know.
What?
Where the guy is at the Pesach Seder screaming, shut up, Abba Yerushalayim, shut up, Abba Yerushalayim. And from the kitchen he hears, Mendel, not so loud, we just redid the kitchen.
It's great.
Isn't that a great line?
So this is a PSA for everyone. It's okay to come over to me and say hello. I'm not taking notes. And for all those who see their friends and neighbors coming over to me, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're making aliyah. They're actually just being socially adept. Thank you so much. You just saved my Shabbos.
I'm over the whole guilt thing.
Thank you. T-neck, here I come.
I'm over the entire guilt thing.
Good for you.
I know where I belong, and I'm not there.
And you're going to be there.
And I'll be there eventually.
Soon.
I hope. Please, God. But the guilt thing, hey, don't have to convince me. I know where all of us need to be at this point. And hopefully we'll all go ASAP. Go to the website, nbn.org.il, and just like so many others have done, start the process and stop building. Oh, this will be a good one. Maybe you'll hear some of the backlash when you're in the T-neck area.
So don't say it.
I'm going to say it.
Oh, God.
Stop building such fancy homes and fancy shuls. In American communities, everybody, stop doing it. All you're doing is building structures to be used by other communities down the road. There you go. As subtly as I could put it, I could be much more direct, you should know, and much more descriptive, but I won't. I'll simply keep it at that. You're ready to take out anybody who has an issue with this? I hope, because I won't be a T-neck for Shabbos.
Do you have an extra bedroom by you?
I was hoping I could get you to come. Are you kidding me?
Besimcha.
You would enhance the lives of so many people if you showed up in my neighborhood. Are you kidding me? Be amazing. Be incredible.
It's great to have you.
Oh, mazal tov to the Seagulls. Yehuda Segal is getting, by the way, Jewish hero. The guy, I'm not allowed to say on the air what he does, but the guy's been, you know.
Yeah.
He and his friends have been very active with the Israeli military in the last few months. So he gets to celebrate a Simcha Baruch Hashem.
Yeah.
Getting married on
good
Thursday.
Stuff.
Mamish good stuff. And I'll tell you, you know, my family jokes, I call him a Jewish hero, but I mean, you know, he is, like the rest of them are. They're all heroes.
Yep.
I joke that... Because he is friendly with so many drone experts that if the Ofruf wouldn't have been on Shabbos, they could have dropped the candy from a drone. right onto him. which his father confirmed that, in fact, if it wasn't a weekday, someone would have done it without a doubt.
Hey, oh, for sure.
It's great shtick, Rabbi Fass.
It's
come
great
on.
Shtick. I'm surprised we haven't done it yet.
Yeah, somebody should do it on one of these Kotel celebrations.
Or confetti at a wedding.
You try to get a drone into the airspace.
No, forget it. You do a place that gives you a permit.
Do those still exist here? I'm not so sure.
Not these days.
Not these days is right.
Great to host you. Great to have you here. Great to see you in person. And hosting you today and hopefully hosting you at the parade. Maybe you can jump on the float.
I mentioned to Rabbi Fass that there's somebody in New York who is really advocating for the idea of doing some type of broadcast from one of the floats. If I had to choose a float, I mean, hey, I have a lot of people who are friends along that route, but I mean, come on.
Thank you so much.
If I get to act like a phony Aliyah guy by being on the Nefesh B'Nefesh float, what are you kidding me?
Anyone who comes on the float gets an immediate Aliyah certificate and a pastille and notary and whatnot.
First of all, don't say that, because if you're giving out apostilles like that, there are a lot of people who get impatient who would love to take advantage of that service. Yes. That's a good business, by the way. A red tape cutter who can get you an apostille, unless you're telling me it's much different today. Is it much?
No, it just takes a process.
Right.
We have the pastilles are around. The people who do it, you have to wait.
Yeah, but I get it. But there are those who would pay the money to have it done in a day.
Oh, I would even try to get an in-house notary and a pastille, you know, in the thing. But we'll talk about that.
And what's funny, again, what's funny is that a lot of different services that you never thought you'd be able to do in-house, you now do in-house, but not
correct.
But not that one.
Yeah, well, certain things are regulated.
Yeah, but... Mm-hmm. But there's, okay, anyway. Final comment.
This is so many final comments. You got me in trouble with that. Yes.
With T-Deck, I know. Final comment.
Yes, sir.
I'm in the hotel today. Shout out to the Inbal. Nice.
By the way, what?
Our first official meeting was in the Inbal Hotel.
When?
I'm thinking 25 years ago.
I don't know.
Were you already here 25 years ago?
I was here 22 and a half.
So then it was. So 22 years ago. Our first meeting ever in Israel was in that hotel. Ever in Israel. We probably met in the United States before then. Anyway.
On the couches.
Correct, yeah. In which now is under construction. So, you know, you have to fend for yourself. I mean, I don't want to go into the hotel experience.
So horrible. I feel for you. I really, really feel for you. You have to walk over and get your croissant.
Anyway, today I'm sitting at the Inbal, and a gentleman walks over to me and says, I don't know if you remember me. We were neighbors 20 plus years ago. I made Ali. This is a gentleman with a Hamburg and dressed as a Rosh Hashiva. And by the way, I found out he's a Rosh Kollel in the city that I'm about to mention. I made Aliyah right after COVID from Brooklyn to Tzfat. And I could never have done it without Mark Rosenberg and one of the young ladies here who we never met named Noah. Yeah. Those two people.
It's beautiful.
Isn't that nice?
Very nice.
And he is a Rosh Kollel in Tzfat.
Yefemod.
Is that cool?
He's a schuyot. Very nice.
No coincidence that God had me sitting there and he comes over to me. No such thing as a coincidence. What did I learn today? I learned that the people from Brooklyn, they make Aliyat Tzfat. And people like myself who went to the right day schools and high schools and marched in every parade and demonstration still had taken their sweet little time getting to the Holy Land.
As long as you're in the right direction. Walking in the right direction.
Unlike Rabbi Fast.
Oh, stop it.
Who was in his, what were you, in your 20s in Florida when the first, were you in your 20s? In his 20s, wow. I have kids who are older than that now. You were in your 20s when you saw this vision and said, it's time to start heading east. Boy, oh boy. And Tony Gelbart, he was a very, and still is, a very good partner. You know, Hashem makes shidduchim. Did you ever think how he sometimes makes shidduchim even outside the marriage area?
Oh, Baruch. 100%.
He made a good shidduch for you.
The best, the dearest friend.
And he'll be in New York brother. Also. He'll be in New York also.
He's going to be in New York and flying back with me to Israel. Nice. He'll be with us next week. We have a bunch of meetings. Amazing. Yeah, no. 22 years, we speak twice a day. Except for Shabbat and Chagim. 22 years.
Boy, Rabbi Fass. That three-day yontif must be a respite for you.
It's funny.
You get to relax.
We joke. We say it's like when an Apollo re-entry. You know, when you go around the moon, like, NASA's closed. I'll see you in 3 days. Just tell me you're around the moon.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you. Well, anyway, thank you again for everything.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you tomorrow. You have a special guest coming here tomorrow.
Yes, it'll be great to see.
Yeah. I started this whole thing about feeling guilty. Because someone said to me when Rabbi D spoke in Teaneck last week.
Yeah, I heard.
You heard about the guilt?
Mm-hmm.
But he has a right. Yeah. Well, I don't know, but right's the wrong word. Whatever. It's a legit.
He has a voice.
Right, he has
a legitimate voice.
But it's going to be a topic with me tomorrow, obviously.
Yeah, especially here. Great background.
We're in the heart of Aliyah right here in Jerusalem. I mean, come on. Tada rabba.
My pleasure.
He is the man. He is the man. If you make contact with Nefesh B'Nefesh, understand that it all began with Rabbi Fass and Tony Gelbart with a dream of doing exactly what they're doing, making North American Aliyah as easy as possible. Pretty amazing. And that whole thing continues all the way until today. More coming up. Leave it right here at JM in the AM.